morning, everyone. Yes, head spins. If you want a lesson, I will give it to you. But I have now have had two kids, and I'm wearing these heels. So I don't think, me personally, I can do the head spin. It's not really in the deck of cards. But if anyone wants a lesson on how to do it, it's actually quite easy if you put your heart into it. You can see me afterwards. So thank you, Social Media Strategy Summit, for inviting me to do this keynote. I'm really a big believer in the spirit of camaraderie in this industry. It's moving so quickly. It's so overwhelming about the new platforms that come on and their new features. Facebook, Google, Instagram, Snap, they're changing the rules basically every 6 months, maybe every 3 months now. And so as the industry, as we're trying to figure out how we succeed in this industry, whether we're representing a brand or a media company, it's so important for everyone to really share sort of what they're learning so that we as industry can rise up together. So Great Big Story is a global media company devoted to cinematic storytelling. We launched in market 23 months ago and have seen incredible response from a social media audience, rabid fans that just love our content. And I was asked by Social Media Strategy to sort of go through a case study of what made Great Big Story so special, given that everyone's so overwhelmed by the amount of content that's out there. The fight to sort of grab people's attention is so hard. How did you figure out, especially in social media, to really cut through the noise and really touch the audience that you have? So 23 months ago, we sat down and we asked ourselves, what if you built a global media company from the ground up? What parts would you put together? And the first thing we knew for sure is that we wanted the HBO quality. HBO is one of our corporate cousins. And so this sort of real commitment to cinematic storytelling and high production quality and really, you know, speaking to emotional resonance with our audience was sort of the first thing. The second thing was that we said that if we could capture the global reach and the deep engagement that TED has, in which no matter sort of what TED Talk is out there, anyone from anywhere around the world feels compelled, they see themselves in it. What if we were able to really capture that in the reach and deep engagement? And finally, because we launched Great Big Story in 2015, we really looked at BuzzFeed and sort of their social success. And so when we thought about what Great Big Story was going to be, we said we wanted HBO quality, we wanted TED's global reach and engagement, and we wanted BuzzFeed's social success. So I'm going to show you a quick sizzle about the things that we produce.
For a second. Great Big Story is the home of amazing people doing improbable things. Like this architect building an Arctic skyscraper with his bare hands. Or this father and son racing tiny drones at impossible speeds. And this fighter who's crushed every stereotype on her way to being the baddest in the world. Get away with these stories and more every day at Great Big Story.
And so that was our sizzle reel of us hiring tons of producers and having them travel to over 80 countries to date, uncovering untold stories. And when we did this and we published on Facebook, on YouTube, on Instagram, we, in 23 months, we were able to get 10 million fans worldwide. That's real fans, YouTube subscribers, Facebook followers, newsletter subscribers, app downloaders. We also are on Apple TV. Those are our subscriber. Even Apple News has an ability for you to subscribe to us. And so these are real fans in which we can reach them every single day, not just a viewer, not people who just happened upon our brand. Next, in the 23 months, we've produced over 1,400 original stories and traveled to over 80 countries. We've uncovered really amazing stories because we just really believe that humans are capable of incredible things and their stories really need to be told. And finally, we have amassed 1.7 billion multi-platform views, and we're just getting started because what's important to me is not necessarily the absolute numbers, but knowing that year over year, we have triple double-digit growth across the board, and we're just getting started. the numbers that really are important to us is actually, you know, going back and as we're trying to figure out how to cut through the noise, a view is great, but sometimes a view happens by accident. And so what we wanted to look at was how much time were people spending with Great Big Story. And so this past year, we had 104 minutes viewed on both Facebook and YouTube. 104 minutes, that's 104 million minutes. That's an incredible amount of time that our fans have spent with our content. 70% YouTube completion rate. And this is one of the things that as people put so much content out there and there is this race to really just amass views, people aren't stopping to say, did they really watch it? Did they really like see the whole entire video through in which the story that you put out there, are they actually completing sort of the what you put your heart and soul and sort of put out into the world? On Apple TV, people are spending 30 minutes with Great Big Story per session. So our marker docs are about 2 to 3 minutes long. And so when people turn on their Apple TV and go to Great Big Story, they are rabbit holing on our content. They are watching, on average, 10 of our videos all in a row. They're really sitting down and really absorbed into the Great Big Story world. And what I am particularly proud of is that when we look into the comments section, and when we look at what people are saying on social media about us, it's 92% positive, which is amazing because in the comments section, that's where trolls live. That's, you know, where, you know, when people are angry, they let it out. But with our brand, 92% of the comments that we've seen are positive. And so people ask us, why or how were you able to not only get the absolute numbers of scale, but also that deep engagement and positivity that people are willing to spend 104 million minutes with you, 30 minutes at a time on Apple TV, and when they feel compelled to sort of comment on what they've seen, it's 92% positive. And what we knew from the very, very beginning is that in order to sort of cut through the noise of everything that people are able to get on social media right now, that we understood the need to activate curiosity in our audience. The ability to really figure out and really pay attention to, is this something that we would be curious about? Is this something that we would be moved to watch? Is this something that we would be moved to share? And so this is a small selection of the 1,400 stories that we've told to date. They're 2 to 3 minutes long. We post them everywhere. We publish about 3 videos per day. And here, for us, when we really think about the stories that we uncover, it isn't about chasing cool. It isn't about trying to sort of figure out the next trend or sort of to hop on the latest news item. It's actually about figuring out, is the story even worth telling in the first place? And so for a media company that has really decided to launch in the social media age, it's sort of weird to say this, but at Great Big Story, we don't listen to the internet. We don't come up with our creative ideas based on numbers. We go very analog about it. We have our producers, and we say, go and find us a good story. You are empowered to do so. You have full authority. Go and find really great stories out there that you feel will really take someone on an emotional journey. And then, only after we have made our creative bet in which we feel that this story is worth being told, then we use the social media analytics to figure out how we get it in front of someone that would really like it. And with the targeting capability, once one person sees it and we understand their profile, we find more people that are similar to that profile, and that's how we really grow our audience. It's not about chasing cool, because right now everyone has very similar metrics. They see trending topics on all the different platforms, and people sometimes think that that's the way you get ahead, is to be that one nanosecond faster of capturing or identifying that trend out in the marketplace. But that nanosecond isn't going to be that helpful because everyone is doing it. And in social media right now, when there's content, you hear a lot of the same, but different. And the audience see this too, in which, you know, they will, you know, scroll right past things that they've seen before because you and every other media company that's really looking at data for the creative ideas are looking at the same data and probably coming up with the same creative ideas. Maybe some person has a higher production quality than the other. Maybe someone has something talent-led or not. But because the idea in and of itself is something that is easily traded out in the open market through trending topics, through identifying it in that way, by not really sort of taking a step back and going analog and sort of your idea creation and relying so heavily on data to give you your creative ideas, that's something that we felt was a recipe to sort of be part of the pack and not cut through the noise of social media. So every single day at Great Big Story, we do pitch meetings with our producers. And a lot of people ask us, how did you guys come up with this idea? And our answer is we built a system in which we continually encourage our producers to go out there and find stories. And we have criteria. We have content filters in which every single idea that comes through, we ask, number one, is this story surprising? Is it unexpected? Is it something that you've sort of seen before? If it has, then it's probably not a great big story. Number two, curiosity. After looking through it, after watching the video, did you want to learn more? Did you want to go on Wikipedia to sort of find the background story? Did you want to sort of do another Google search? Did you want to go on our YouTube page and say, hey, I wonder what else is going on this subject? Did you do that? If you didn't want to do that, that's probably not a great big story. Number three, is it evocative? After watching this story or after hearing about this story, did it make you feel a certain way? It could be bad, it could be good, it could be sad, it could be really happy, but did it evoke a certain feeling out of you? If it didn't, then it's not a great big story. And finally, buzz. And not in the, it's sort of like everyone is talking about it, but buzz in that, does it sort of hit at that human reflex that when you hear about something or you watch about something, you want to share it with someone? Did it really, you know, trigger that reflex in people in which they want to share it with someone else? If it did not, then it's not a great big story. And so these four things seem sort of simple, but we actually take it as our true sort of internal compass of every time, every single day at 9:30 a.m. when our executive producers come together and go through the pitches, we ask these four questions over and over and over again. And you can imagine that with 1,400 microdocs that we've published to date, we've had a whole lot more pitches that we turned down. And so our producers know that on average, only about 10% of their story ideas come through. How do we sort of encourage our producers who are creative to keep coming up with more ideas? And how do we not sort of stay up at night and feel that we're going to run out of good ideas? And one of the things that I mentioned before is our daily pitch meetings. And in each daily pitch meeting, we go through a pitch. We go through these four sort of rules or content filters. And then we give it a green light, yes, go ahead, develop it, book the person, book your flight, go out there and like film it. Or two, we give it a yellow light and we give notes. One of the notes could be, so I'm storyboarding out your idea right here and I can sort of see the first 15 seconds doing really well and then it sort of dies. What else is there to the story that could make it a little bit bigger than what we have here? So that's a yellow light. And a red light is, this doesn't seem like a fit, but we tell you exactly why. And for a creative person, the number one thing that demotivates them the most is they come up with a great idea, or they think it's a great idea, and they don't hear anything back. They don't know if it's good, If it's bad, the reasons why you pick that person's idea over your idea. And so what we do is, no matter how long it takes at 9:30 a.m., no matter how many pitches there are, our executive producers go through each and every one of the pitches and gives immediate feedback. And so by 10:30, by 11 o'clock, a producer who got a yellow light or a red light knows exactly sort of what to change or what to do and to go back and pitch even more ideas. And that might even spur additional ideas of saying, oh, if that's what they really wanted, I can pitch this other idea that I've been reading about. And that's really core to what Great Big Story is about. We really want to make sure that we feed this creative soul of our producers, and that they feel that they are fully invested in which, if we qualify it as a great big story, they have our full support to go out and sort of capture that moment and how they see it. So this is one of the stories that made it through the pitch process that I would like to share with you. Can we roll the tape?
我就是他的手，他就是我的眼。双手，我们两个人合伙种起来。我现在是从两千年开始，两千年开始，两只眼睛已经全部失明了，就是成盲人了。 就是我的伙伴啊，贾文琪，他从小就没有双手。对了，他背着我这么13年了，就是一直他就是这样，13年背着我过河。我们两个吧，就是最好的朋友。
我跟贾文琪，就是说我们从2002年开始种树吧。
过去的时候，这个整是埋没的荒滩，埋没的这个乱世，埋没的这个荒沙。我们种这些树啊，也是种了为了这个环境，也是为了后代。种树吧，我们也就成了我们今后的一个任务，是一个。
一个重要的任务了，就是虽然我们生活上困难一些，经济上困难一些，但是我们在精神上感到特别欣慰，就是树木，啊，就跟这一碗粥一这个一民民这个绿色的围兵，在这个捕风捉夜的，严阵以待。我们两个在一块干活的时候，说的我们根本就没有感觉到我们是残疾人，我们就是一个团队。
So those are two best friends in China. And if we go, was it surprising? Yeah, like I personally would have never thought that there would be two best friends in China planting 10,000 trees over a wasteland, and that they're both disabled. And when they come together, they feel this hope and this joy, and they feel empowered. It's amazing. It speaks to the evocativeness of sort of the feeling that you get watching that story. And it makes you curious. I want to know, like, what does it take to actually plant a tree? Because those guys didn't seem to be using very sophisticated tools there. Do they just put a seed in? Like, I don't know. And Buzz, do you want to share that video? And it's not our most shared video, but it's sort of on an average shared video. But we saw... I don't know the exact number, on it, but I think maybe a million shares, I forget. But it's sort of that level of commitment to the story at first. And if you were to go into your top trending topics, I'm sure none of the elements of that story would have shown up. But it was a success on social media because we went analog in how we thought about what makes a really great big story. And we really thought about if this is something that people would engage with and if it's something that would really draw out an emotion on them. So by having this commitment to really going analog and figuring out if the story is worth telling to begin with, and having sort of the image in the back of our mind in which it's going to have HBO quality, it's going to have the TED global reach and engagement, and it's going to have like the social success of BuzzFeed, what we've been doing is that we're taking storytelling, which is the oldest art form in the world, and really bringing it to social media and combining that all together, we're able to really reignite the wonder that you've been missing out in the world. And so at Great Big Story, the metrics that really matter to us is engagement and emotion. We know that a story is successful not on the views, but actually on, did people actually share this? Did they comment on it? What did they say about it? Which requires a lot of analytics and a lot of effort to measure it, because on social media, the platforms are all over the place. And also, because we produce over 1,400 stories and have over 1.7 billion views, that's just a lot of data. But one of the things that we do, and we're very committed to, and can you just play this? So this is EQ, in which for every video that we put out there, we're really monitoring sort of the emotional quotient or the EQ of a video. What are people saying about it? Understanding sort of the shares, the likes, everything like this. The positive reactions, we really measure to understand. And so if something's negative, we're wondering, is it because of bots? Because that could likely be an answer. Or is it because there was something that we didn't really sort of envision or we didn't really see coming at us, in which we told the story one way, but there's like a strong group of people that think very differently about this topic. And on top of that, we look at the comments and we actually scrape all of our social media comments into a artificial intelligence, natural language processing machine, for the lack of a better word, so that we can understand how people are really feeling. So when they say things happen, we know that that means sadness. Or if they say OMG, we know that's sort of like surprise and happiness. But by doing this sort of natural language processing through all of our comments and marrying that with sort of the hard numbers of the, you know, the likes, the emotional output, and the positive reactions and things like that, we're really able to really get down to what's really working in the story for us. And from this, what we do is that we made a very big bet on sort of the creative story, in which we felt that it is something that's worth telling. We look at this to sort of make sure that it's really having the effect we want it. And then with social targeting, we're trying to understand organically the people who have shared this or the people who have viewed this. What is their profile? And their profile could be circa 1990s, I am a fan of R.L. Stein and sort of 90s hit sitcoms, blah, blah, like that could be sort of the group. And we're like, okay, how can we find groups that sort of have similar interests? Because I bet you if we put this in front of them, because of that demographic or audience profile, we're able to really get even more engagement because it aligns with sort of that particular group. So that's what we really do at Great Big Story. We really want the world, and how we come to work every single morning at Great Big Story is we want everyone to feel inspired and to really wonder the world. And that's it for the Great Big Story case study, and now I'll open it up to any questions that you may have.
Thank you, Wen. As I promised, folks, I have a handheld mic, and the drill is you raise your hand, bring the mic to you. I get a little out of breath sometimes. Not when they're real close, though.
Hi, I was just wondering, I know you said, obviously, that you're already at 10 million fans in 23 months and that you publish 3 videos per day. It seems as though you have an algorithm or a formula for everything else. Can I ask, what is the correlation between the number of fans you have and the amount of content or your planned number of fans? Like, how did you arrive at that number?
It was the constraints of, to produce a story, how many people do you need to hire? Because it's not one producer, one story, and they have to produce it every day. We really believe that there's wonder in the world and there's real people out there that have stories. And so it takes time to call up someone, say, hi, we heard about you. You know, can we sort of come and film you for this thing called Great Big Story? It just takes time. So the 3 stories a day was physical constraints of production. And we felt 3 was what would satisfy a consumer on a daily basis of being able to sort of watch our things. So we have this daily newsletter in which we felt, if you get a newsletter, you sort of want at least 3 videos, right? And so that was just us being realistic and not compromising on quality. And from there, we really looked at our audience insights folks to really figure out, with these 3 videos a day, who do you sort of give it to, where do you post, how do you target? And what's really wonderful about Great Big Story is our videos are evergreen. So the video I showed you about the Chinese best friends, would you know what year it was produced? No, and that applies to all 1,400 of our micro docs, because we don't tell stories that are of the moment. We're not chasing cool. So the amount of money we invested in that can sort of be reaped over time to many, many audiences all around the world.
Other questions?
So we'll be the question table. Okay. So you talked about what you fund and you talked about your producers, and it doesn't look like, because you have the quality of HBO, that you're taking user content, you're producing it all on your own. So how do you determine your ROI, mm-hmm. and how do you determine your budget? Are you doing advertising on the site, and does that take away from any of your big stories?
Yeah. Our ROI is, did this story move someone? Because we know that if it moves someone, it's at a level in which we can figure out the business model afterwards. Right now, our business model, we make money in 2 ways. The first way is branded content, in which a brand who sort of loves our point of view on the world, that wants to be part of a brand that's really about wondering the world, we can produce stories for them. And we have a brand studio that works closely with brands. Or you can do something which we call sponsored editorial, in which, because we have 3 stories every single day and we have this machine of creative people just going out there, a brand can come to us and say, hey, I don't want to actually be sort of like a slow pan across my, you know, logo type of stuff, but I really want to be, let's say, with the Chinese best friends, associated with uplifting stories about the environment. So we say, okay, great, here are sort of 5 stories that we think are a fit. Would you want to sponsor them? And if they say yes, then that's great, and that's how we sort of make our money. The only place that I do have to say is I don't really, I'm not a big fan of inventory-based ads, especially in storytelling. And so the pre-rolls that we do have on our site is via YouTube's AdSense. And we just found that when we turned off AdSense and made the experience super clean, the algorithm did not reward us in sort of exposing our content to fans. And so that's the only reason right now that we have pre-rolls. And we keep it pretty limited as much as possible. But that's something that we, every single day, every time we post, we really track, you know, asset by asset, sort of how the algorithms are changing. And because we know that we have a pretty standard way of looking at our content, so we know all of our content is at the same level, it's very easy to understand when an algorithm has changed versus it was something you did creatively and that you sort of decided to do something cheaper or less or lower production quality. That allows us to really look at the different platforms and understand sort of what the algorithm is rewarding and really play our hand well in that way.
All right, we have two mics floating, so Mike is going to deliver the mic over here. How's that?
Hi, good morning, Wen.
Hi.
Thank you. So quick question. How do you source content, and how do you keep the pipeline of original ideas coming to the point where you can amass, right, a large catalog?
So I talked about the daily pitches, in which that seems sort of simple, but a lot of media companies don't do that. We give a lot of authority, creative authority, to our producers. Some media companies say, you research the story, you go out and shoot it, and you edit it, and you do the music, and we just feel that a story needs someone to be proud of it, and to really own it, and to put their soul into it, and so we sort of keep that to a single person so that their creative vision is fulfilled. And second to that, Wonder the World, it's sort of the reason why I wake up every morning and I'm so proud to be part of Great Big Story, because it's not just the content that we make, it's sort of what we do every day, it's what we want to inspire people, and it's what we sort of see our role at Great Big Story. And so that type of purposefulness really drives a lot of creative ideas, because it's, first, it's the environment, it is, second, it's the systems, and third, it's this, what I would call almost like a moral compass that really drives it.
So thank you. My follow-up to that is the data that's being generated on the back end now.
Yep.
What kind of uses are you seeing for that in other revenue-generating areas? Right?
Well, right now we're keeping it editorial. We sometimes reveal it to advertisers who are interested in it. We built a pretty robust system in which we're not quite ready to sort of give it out to the world yet, but some advertisers have asked us to sort of take their social media data and really sort of do the exact same thing, because AI on the comments it takes a big investment and it takes a commitment that we've done, and in order for it to be useful to people outside of our world, it just takes a little bit more time and development for us to do so.
Other questions?
Hi there. Thank you so much for the presentation. I'm wondering, you're posting the exact same content on Facebook and YouTube, which I think is fantastic for kind of A-B testing pros and cons of different channels. What are the biggest differences, perhaps in audience profile, audience retention, that you're seeing on those two different channels? Because one is, they're very different. So I'm curious to know what your experience is.
I mean, you sort of look at the average demographic of each platform. YouTube is younger and more male. Facebook is basically the world. So it's whatever straight down the middle is Facebook. Instagram's a little bit more female and young. And so for us, we go back to a little bit human truths, in which the best friends in China, could you say that's a really female story? Maybe if you consider just, caring about the world's female, but I feel like that's like a human trait. So we try to keep our content pretty balanced, but there are different habits that each platform has. So for instance, Facebook is, as a platform, has taught its users to scroll right through. And so you can't really expect as high of a completion rate. You can't expect the amount of time spent is going to be as long as YouTube, in which the people who come to YouTube are really there to watch videos and they're clicking on it. And I think knowing sort of what the platforms have trained their audience to do, you sort of have to think about your own strategy of how you can play well to that or not. That helps.
Thank you so much. As far as branded content, do you have any examples you can talk to about? We all know brands and advertisers, one of their goals is sales lift or revenue, increased subscriptions. Do you have any examples you can talk about where you guys were able to track any sort of sales lift from videos you produce for brands?
So here, it's a lot of, we do like the standard studies of brand engagement and things like that. A lot of the brands that come to us, this is not a DR ad. It's not direct-to-consumer. It's a lot very much of a brand building and an association. And so what we do for Genesis, for instance, it's a luxury car brand. We said, we posted, you know, they did sponsored editorial. They really loved the idea around origins, the origins of things, because Genesis, origins, it's really about this commitment to craftsmanship and sort of where things came from. And so we ran a year-long sort of content partnership with them. And what we found is not only did the brand engagement go up, but also that the stories that we produced for Genesis actually got picked up by multiple media outlets as part of an editorial like, hey, did you see this? So that was like on Fast Company, on Vox, on a lot of other platforms. So when we partner with brands, we really think about the storytelling and the multiple ways of really getting their brand out there.
We have time for a couple more questions.
I think there's one in front here.
We've got one back here.
Hi, good morning. Hi. Thanks for the presentation. And you mentioned at the beginning that you first display the content and then you follow people like in profile that they're very similar. Would you mind going in deeper detail into how you do that?
Yeah. So a lot of our growth is about 90% organic. So a lot of the audience that we've got, we've been able to get, whether it's via a view or whether it's a fan and they've subscribed, has been done so organically. And that meant that when we did use paid, we used it very, very specifically. So for instance, how many of you guys remember R.L. Stine? He was sort of like a tween, like horror, like you would have a bookshelf of like 30 of his, you know, books. So someone was really curious about R.L. Stine and say, you know, how did he basically come up with hundreds of teen horror, like paperback books that basically if you were born from a certain time to a certain time, you probably had at least 10 of them on your bookshelf. What's his story? And we found out that he started out as a comedian and then found horror was just more lucrative for him. And he was like really funny. So we had this video and we say, hey, it's a great video. It's a great story. It should be out there. We're going to put a little bit of money towards it. Who do you target? And for us, we said, well, first, if you're an R.L. Stine fan. Next, I think we said, well, then you would probably like Animaniacs and a couple of other like TV shows at that time. And also maybe, you know, you would have, you know, been part of these type of schools. And so we really thought about if you were a fan of R.L. Stine naturally and wanted to know about this, what sort of interests would you have? What sort of things would you be fans of? And we sort of really built a profile for each story to understand who would really be into this. Who would be like, oh my God, I need to share this and like tell the world about it. And that's for our limited paid budget of our audience targeting. That's how we really think about it. And then what happens is because it's coming from such an authentic place that it is a true R.L. Stine fan, they share it and they share it. And so you really get that social network effect and you really get an organic audience versus saying, R.L. Stine, okay, I think it's female ages 18 to 34, blast it. And that's just not as efficient, and it doesn't really build a real core fan base that will return to your brand as much.
When we have time for one more question, I'm going to ask you to keep your response to about a minute
okay.
to stay on schedule. So one last question. I saw, Mike, can you get that person over there, please? So short question, short response, and we'll stay on schedule.
Roger that.
Hi. So the model that you follow when making these videos truly is fascinating, I think. But I guess my question to you would be a recommendation for trying to follow the same model but condensing it to, say, a smaller organization where you want to focus on the people of the company and the people who are the backbone of everyday life. So, you know, considering a budget as well, you know, where you really just want to focus on the people and making connections. Do you have any recommendations on how to do that while maybe following the same quality?
Mm-hmm. This is focus on the storytelling. If it's something that is, if you're saying that's a really good story versus my audience thinks it, I think my audience might. If anything, like if you're going to create something, create it for yourself, and that will probably get it to that next level of quality versus making it for a mass ghost audience that you may not know as well.
Thank you, Wen. Let's give it up for Wen, too.